Bunny pushed the slivers of meat aside. He picked up a silvery button from beside his plate and clipped it to his ear. Moments later, his jaw bunched. Harris tried not to stare and made inroads on her dinner. Beside her, Petrus was chatting with Cecilia, almost pointedly ignoring her. Cecilia winked past him. So she had explained, or so Harris hoped. Bunny touched her wrist lightly, and she turned back to him.
We may have a problem. Mr. Smith divested himself of the tagger. Captain Siggin found it, but not the Mr. Smith. He's already sealed the flitter hangers and other sources of transport, but Mr. Smith is a skilled rider.
We are not going out looking for that idiot on horseback in the dark.
No, you're right, we aren't. The militia are. And if he found us that mare he stole, I will have his hide on my wall. I don't know how a registered embryo could end up this stupid.
He'll come here. He wants in on the fun, that's all. There's a party he wants to play. He's like Ronnie was before. He'll think of a disguise or something from...
Before anyone could get up to investigate, someone outside flung the doors open. There stood a masked man in a costume more bizarre than any in the room. Puffed breeches under a loud tartan kilt, white hose, buckled shoes, a doublet, a wide-sleeved shirt, a short cape, and a curious pile of velvet and feathers on his head. It looked as if he had ransacked a costume shop. He held the reins of a skittish horse and brandished a sword. Bunny sat rigid. From the far end of the table, the elderly lady Ronnie had partnered stood up abruptly, glaring at Bunny.
Now this is ridiculous. Disgraceful mixing of periods. Imagine wearing a kilt over breeches. If this is your surprise, young Brathcombe, it is singularly unamusing.
For once, Bunny had nothing to say. Harris stared at the masked man with instant certainty. No one else on the planet would do something like this. Were those mustaches sticking out from behind the mask? And what should she do? She caught a glimpse of a servant behind the horse trying to edge nearer, but the frightened animal plunged and kicked, and the servant retreated.
It is traditional, I believe, to have a masked stranger make away with a beautiful woman at affairs like this.
Harris looked around the room. The Crown Minister had turned white, but most people were amused, interested. The servant Harris had first seen came in sight again. The masked man turned and handed him the reins.
Here, hold my mount.
Wide-eyed, the servant did so. Then the masked man strode into the dining hall, up the length to the family's table, grabbed Raffaella firmly by one wrist, and bowed to Ronnie.
You stole a singer from me. I but returned the compliment.
Imposter!
Ronnie leapt to his feet and yanked the mask from the man's face and the sword from his hand. Mr. Smith, without a doubt. But Ronnie's furious stare down the table denied it.
You would have us think you're the prince, because everyone knows I quarreled with the prince, but you're only a common mechanic.
Let go of my arm.
Mr. Smith complied, looking confused.
You're a mole.
Raffaella rubbed her wrist and looked away, pointedly ignoring the intruder. Harris suddenly realized where Ronnie was going with this and could hardly believe he had thought so fast. She waited for the cue she was sure he would give.
Don't think I didn't see you ogling Rafa on my aunt's yacht. Just because you know how to use makeup, you thought you could pass yourself off as the prince. Look at you. You're in a room full of people who know the prince. Didn't you think of that? Did you really expect to fool people by covering your face? Did you hear what Lord Thornbuckle's aunt said? We know how to dress in period costumes. This mess you have on is a travesty. Pitiful.
Ronnie looked down the table at Harris.
I must complain, Captain Serrano, about the actions of your crewmen.
Harris stood smoothly.
You're quite right. I regret that I didn't recognize him in his disguise. But he is the only junior environmental tech, and I've never seen him in anything but a shipsuit. I take full responsibility. Petrus.
Petrus stood as well.
We'll make sure this individual doesn't intrude again, and I dare say his working papers will be canceled permanently.
But I am, and this was all I could find.
Silence! I insist that my militia escort this individual to the shuttle port and all the way into the custody of your yacht, Lady Cecilia. I believe I am correct in saying there may be charges beyond my jurisdiction involving impersonation of a member of the royal family.
He inclined his head to Kevil Mahoney, who nodded.
Then I would not have him on this planet 1 hour longer than necessary. Captain Serrano, if you will inform your standing watch.
With pleasure.
Mr. Smith found himself overpowered and dragged away by militia, while Harris called the yacht and arranged for his confinement. Ronnie still stood at the end of the table, and he looked to Bunny for permission to speak. Bunny nodded. Ronnie rubbed his nose a moment until he had everyone's attention.
Most of you know that I was exiled for a year after the prince and I had had a dispute. Some of you know more. But what you may not know is how I could be so sure the prince had not come here in some disguise or other. When I knew where my aunt was bringing me, I worried about that myself and looked it up. The prince was posted to the Royal Aerospace Service Depot on Navern.
Ronnie was looking at the Crown Minister, who, Harris noted, suddenly looked very alert.
I'm sure any of you can check that posting and confirm it. And this man, I don't even know his name, caught my eye on the yacht because he did somewhat resemble the prince, and he was sneaking around Raffaella.
But are you sure it wasn't the prince pretending to be an environmental tech?
Of course it wasn't. We had both sworn an oath to duel if we saw each other within the next year. Do you think both of us would be coward enough to ignore that? That person didn't even know how to use a sword.
He looked angry. Rafa patted his hand, and he sat down again. Harris could almost hear the collective lurch with which everyone tried to return to the mood of a hunt dinner and ball and ignore the interruption, as Bunny signaled and the servants brought in another course. George leaned against the mirrored wall of the ballroom, feeling sulky again. Ronnie and Rafa hardly seemed to notice the music, but flowed with it like leaves on a stream. Captain Serrano and Petrus, he would like to have made a jest of them, but could not. They had gone through so much. They deserved their obvious happiness. If only Bubbles had not turned against him. They could have made another good match, he was sure. He liked her well enough, now that Rafa had turned to Ronnie. Blondes set off his own dark handsomeness. It was unfair. He and the prince alone out of all that crowd could not enjoy the party. And while he was luckier than the prince, in being here and not under guard somewhere, he had no one to share his evening with. He watched the whirling dancers idly for a while, then stared. His father. His father and Ronnie's aunt. Talking, laughing, obviously enjoying each other. They danced by, and Lady Cecilia winked at him. His father and that old... Although she wasn't all that bad, really. She danced remarkably well, in fact. He just didn't want her as a stepmother, or aunt, or whatever she and his father might have in mind. The two of them together were definitely too smart for him. He and Ronnie would never enjoy more pranks. He turned away, ready to take a long walk somewhere, and almost fell over the girl coming his way. Her eyes widened.
You're George Starbridge Mahoney, aren't you? Kevil Mahoney's son.
George knew what to do with that kind of look and drew himself up.
Yes, I am.
She had hazel eyes and fluffy hair of a red-brown shade he couldn't have put a name to. Something about her made him feel protective. Something more than the slender wrists and hands, he was sure, or the somewhat pointy face.
Oh, you don't know me. I'm just one of the cousins. You've seen me out hunting, but usually covered with mud.
I should have seen beneath it.
He said it gallantly. He liked being gallant.
Would you care to dance?
He led her onto the floor.
Oh, I love balls!
They whirled around. She danced as lightly as a fox over a fence on its way to take a chicken from the coop. George drew back a moment, wondering. Was he the hunter, or was she?
It doesn't matter. She can't be that certain herself.
He took her past his father and Ronnie's aunt, enjoying their reaction.
So do I. So do I.
The Serrano Legacy Hunting Party is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2002 Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2008 The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Andy Clements, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Terrence Aselford, James Konacek, James Lewis, Michael John Casey, M.B. Van Dorn, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for the Deathstalker series, available at Roadstops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net.